It's the nature of groups to be messy and chaotic, to fall apart and then come together.
Welcome to the Circle Holding Podcast with me, Julia Davis.
And me, Tessa Venuti Sanderson. We are the co-authors of the book Circle Holding, A Practical Guide to Facilitating Talking Circles.
We would love for you to join us for free talks, question and answer sessions, all about the art of holding circle. You can find these at circleholding.org.
I am delighted to have with me today Kate Codrington, who is the author of the second spring book, The Self-Care Guide to Menopause, and also runs group mentoring around perimenopause, which is called The Path to Second Spring. So I'm delighted to dive in today about different aspects of circle and holding space and how do you get to do all that stuff? Welcome.
Oh, thank you. Yes, it's a hot topic.
So I know part of your background was as a successful massage therapist for many years, lots of other strings to your bows as well. But I wondered, you know, when you started to move into group events and holding space for groups, what have been some of the joys of doing that?
So the greatest joy for me is seeing something that I've seeded from a group or from introducing someone or some people meeting in a group or sharing in a group spread like wildfire. And I think that it became very clear to me that as mortality dawned, it's like, Kate, you're going to die. You don't have that much longer. You know, I'm 58 now. This was, I don't know, when I was 50, 51 or something, when this, in the middle of menopause, when the mortality call came particularly clearly, that it was no longer efficient for me to just work one-to-one. That actually, for me to be able to use my skills and education well, one-to-many was really important. And, you know, granted, lots of people get this earlier in their life. It took me a while, but that became really important.
Yeah, so to be able to have that bigger impact ripple out.
Yes, yes. It's seeing, I mean, that's the thing that makes my heart go ba-doom when I see people sharing and people's eyes light up. And it could be because of something I've said or an idea or a possibility, or they let go of some shame, or they forgive themselves, or they see something in a new way, they reframe some aspects of their lives, and then it gets communicated. And you can see little fires being lit. Mm. And I imagine little fires being lit through their wider circle of friends and community and family. And yeah, that's good stuff.
Mm. And I think also in a group setting, when somebody shares an experience and somebody listening has also had that experience, it has that normalizing effect, which can be hugely validating. Like, it's
massive.
Not
massive. It's huge. I mean, it's huge. And, you know, I work one-to-one with people over a year's cycle of sessions. And, you know, I hear them say, oh, and I do this and it feels so awful and I feel so mad and da 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 da. And I'm you know, as a one-to-one space holder, I say, this is normal. You're okay. And that is reassuring. But when they then hear it from a peer and then they hear it all around a room, there's you can feel the relaxation. Everybody's shoulders drop about 3 inches.
Yes. And you mentioned being a space holder. So could you say a little bit about what does holding space mean to you? I mean, that's a massive question, but.
Well, if only somebody would write a good book about it. Well, I have to confess, Tessa, that when you invited me, you set off a real anxiety actually in me. It's so charged. And I immediately, like in a heartbeat, went into feeling like an imposter, like I shouldn't be talking about this. And I remember Julia interviewed me for your book and I had the same thing then. And there's something about this term holding space that sends me into small, feeling small, contracted, feeling not good enough. And I imagine I'm not alone in this.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I think it's very common. Yeah.
It feels, I mean, I have my own story around it, of course, but it feels more like a bigger theme, particularly for people going from one-to-one to groups, which is why you wanted to talk to me about this. And yeah, so thank you very much, because I really need to look at my shit to have this conversation. And I've come all around the houses, and I will unpack it a bit later. But I think that we're doing it anyway. It's something that we're doing anyway in our lives. So when a friend comes with a drama in her life and tells you about the drama, you're holding space for her. So that means that you're compassionate. You let her speak. You don't butt in and tell her about my terrible thing is much worse than yours. And did you hear about so-and-so? She had a terrible thing too. You know, you don't do that. You allow the person to speak and to affirm their feelings. Yeah, that really hurt. Oh my goodness, that hurt. Wow. You know, you give them space, and then maybe off in time, when the charge is dropped, you offer them a bit of a reframe. And that's what holding space is. So anybody who is seeing one-to-one clients is doing it anyway and has all the skills that they need to do this. So, yeah, it's been, and I, you know, I'm getting hot. I'm going to have to take my cape off, because it's hot talking about this stuff. It's really hot.
Is there a term you prefer than holding space? Because you know, it's also like with the word circle. For some people, the word circle brings up particular connotations, and you don't have to use the word circle if you're doing group work. There might be something for your particular client base that would suit much better. So I'm just wondering.
Yeah, I am most comfortable with the term facilitator.
Yeah, facilitator.
Because, and we slightly mentioned this before you pressed record, because that's different from a leader. I think leadership has so many negative connotations. It has so much toxicity around the abuse of power, of privilege, of marginalized and shutting up and shutting out marginalized voices, and all this kind of thing. That term, leadership, really, I really don't like in any kind of form. But facilitator allows me to feel that I can show up to give space. Yeah, and I'm aware of that irony, to give space for people to feel more of themselves. And I facilitate that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think leader is a loaded term, isn't it? Immediately makes you think about somebody having power over. Whereas facilitator, depends how you do it, but certainly there's more opportunity to be on a more equal footing. And I think that's one of the interesting things about thinking of whether there's a pure sharing circle or whether sort of it's a workshop with teaching where you do have some expertise, or that's also something to navigate as well in your role as facilitator.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to go back a bit, another really useful term which we used to use when I trained in biodynamic psychotherapy is the midwife approach. Mm-hmm. So much more about, if you think about all the requirements for birth, you know, there's holding and quietening and soothing and allowing for waves of contraction and waves of intensity, and then for things to quieten down, and trusting the process. So if people don't like the terms space holder or facilitator or leader, then having a midwife approach can be another useful way of thinking about it. What did you ask me though? I just segued out again.
Well, we're thinking more about, you know, the difference in different kinds of ways that you might use circle facilitation. Sometimes you're there, maybe you're also sharing within the circle, but sometimes you're there very much as a teacher.
Yes. Yes. Well, yes, then this is another, oh my God, this is another huge thing. It's huge because one needs a clear intention when you start. So you start with a clear intention. This is a space, you know, you set, you know, one of the things about holding space is that you set the guidelines to create the container. Is the container, and that is, you know, about timing, about who gets to speak, about kindness, judgment, confidentiality, you know, all those regular things that you would hope to have in a group. And part of that containment is does everybody get to speak, or how much of yourself as the facilitator, space holder, midwife do you put in? And I thought that was really clear. You set the intention. This group is for blah blah, and it's going to be like blah blah. It's going to be a circle where everybody gets to speak if they want to, or it's going to be a space where I teach and offer information and facilitate. So I often use process work in the body to allow people to feel more of themselves if that's what they want. So there'll be more processy stuff for me in my work. So I thought that was really clear. And sometimes we have to flow with the needs of the group. So I recently had an experience where I was really clear. This was a workshop I was doing, facilitate. That was your sharing circle where I sit back. And what happened was people weren't feeling held in that circle. And I know that because somebody emailed me to tell me about her process with that. But also, I was left with a disproportionate amount of feelings. So after the circle closed, I felt not good enough, shamed, that I was like not belonging, like a bit of uselessness. All things that are familiar to me personally, but just again, it's this disproportionate amount of feeling. And when in a group, when something isn't expressed or isn't allowed expression in the group, then our task as, well, not our task, we as the space holder, we are given those feelings. Here you are. This needs to be expressed. We are like a lightning rod in the group. Mm. So then I had to be flexible. So, and change, show up more for people, bring more of myself in this situation to allow people to feel more held.
Because I was going to ask you sort of what you felt the difference was around holding space for one person compared to a group. And I think you've already kind of started to talk about that, because it's not just the content of what comes up in the circle, but it's also the group dynamics.
Yes, yes, exactly. And I was, again, thank you so much for the opportunity to think clearly about this. Because in a one-to-one session, your client will hold all the parts. They'll hold the persecutor and the victim and the rescuer and the disruptor and the one who knows everything and the academic, you know, all the roles, all the archetypes are present, you know, in all of us, in your client one-to-one. And in the group, at any one time, different people will hold these different roles. So that you might have a more of a kind of bullshit out there extrovert personality who's more available to take more of a bullying role. Well, why don't we get on with it? And let's, you know, but that, so that in a way, one-to-one, our task is to name the different part. Oh, that sounds like an inner critic. Well, that sounds like a really lovely, mothering, gentle part of you. How can you draw that out to care for yourself? And it's the same process happening in the group, but the charge is, it's more charged, I think, and it takes more courage.
Do you think it also takes more energy? Do you feel that compared to the one-to-one work after a group event, you need to put more self-care in and give yourself more space to kind of settle after it?
Yes, I think so. I think that I do remember when I started out doing groups, so that would be running workshops. It would take me 2 days, 2 days to recover. Like one day in bed, like I'm not speaking to any of my family, I'm not doing anything. My mouth is just flapping and I'm staring at the ceiling. And the second day I might engage with a bit of family stuff. And I thought that was because I was broken, because I wasn't doing it properly, because I wasn't grounded enough and I didn't have enough support and I had support. And, I basically made myself wrong for needing that recovery time. And over the years, that's changed. So I need less. So I think that it is building capacity. So over time, if you're starting running circles now and you feel exhausted, over time, you will develop more capacity and you will need less recovery time. But for some people, working one-to-one, I have friends who are newly into being counsellors, working when you first start out, after a one-to-one session, you're like flat out the rest of the day, because being included in someone's world like that can be completely overwhelming.
And you've already sort of talked about how this is an edgy sort of topic for you, but at the same time, you've built capacity over the years. I'm wondering what's kind of edge when you've been thinking about all of this? Is there an edge there that's still sharp?
Definitely. I think my edge is about showing up more myself and taking more risks. Mm-hmm. Over the years, my awareness of being trauma friendly has grown and grown and grown and grown, so that I've created really soft, kind of cushiony, permissive spaces, and that's absolutely essential. Absolutely essential. But I think that there's also somehow been at the cost of me showing up as myself. So I'm introverted. I love to connect. I can be very quiet and hold, I'm really good at holding people. I'm really good at holding space. But I'm also quite, as you can hear from this interview, I get very overexcited and very in your face and talk too much and wave my arms around a lot. And, there's something about allowing myself to come forward, about allowing my intuition to just come out, about allowing my sort of more of my wildness to be present and to meet people and to name what's happening and to step into the charge. To step into the charge rather than away from it. That's what it is. That's my edge.
People always respond to that as well. Yeah. When they see the facilitator really showing up authentically, it comes back to you 100-fold.
Exactly. Yeah, totally. Mm.
Can you just say a bit more? You're saying about the trauma informed and the sort of the softness. Can you just give a hint of kind of what that looks like?
Well, very permissive. I think. Well, clear, really clear boundaries on the information web page or however you're doing it. In the acceptance, in the confirmation letter, in the reminder letter, when you start, and also giving examples of, for example, what not, if you say this isn't a place to give advice, then you give an example of, so if I say I'm struggling with my anxiety, then an example of giving advice would be, I found that blah, 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 blah for me, it works for me, to give a really clear example. So it's about setting up that container right from the get-go. So everything is as clear as you can make it. Also really permissive language, like really allowing, it's a bit like allowing all the people in the room are welcome. So the not belonging that exists in the outside world for for all sorts of groups will be in the group as well. So naming that at the beginning and saying, we're all holding this to some degree, and you are permitted to take time out of the group. You can lie down. You can. Now is it, or you saying, well, now we're going to divide into pairs and talk about blah, blah. But if you don't want to, that's fine. Or even more permissive, you now get to choose whether you want to journal or talk to a pair about this. So I think that that's a better way of doing it, because then you don't have the preferred option, pair talking, because extroversion is always praised unconsciously in groups. There's another one, you know, whereas introversion is seen as a slightly less than, and you hear that in meditation teachers often. You hear, and now soften your eyes, let your eyes close, or you can soften your gaze and look at the floor, like, B. That's for the B set.
Yeah.
But yeah, so to really stay aware of how we present our material like that, and give permissive language and options, and also be available in some way where you have capacity, where you can really step up for people. Within your own boundary when things go messy, because things will be messy.
Yeah, and if they get messy, it's not that the facilitation... When they get messy, it's not that the facilitation has been bad, or it's just that's human nature and the, you know, the beauty of being in process in a group.
Yeah, well, it's also part of the group organising itself. It's the nature of groups to be messy and chaotic, to fall apart and then come together. That's the, you know, in just the same way as we're cyclical and the earth is cyclical, then groups are also cyclical. So there'll be moments of, you know, gooey, lovely puppy piles of contentment and togetherness, and then times when everybody's like, get me out of here. And it's really important to affirm to ourselves that that's part of the process of being in the group. And that's going to happen. And if it hasn't happened today, then, you know, today is an easy day. It'll probably happen tomorrow.
So do you think part of your capacity has been growing the length of time that you're holding people in a group, from going from one to one to kind of doing one-off workshops? And then, you know, you were talking about this sort of six-month path to second spring mentoring that you're doing. And then also, you know, thinking of kind of longer things perhaps as well. That in that longer journey with a group of people, you're going to get much more of the messiness and the group rearranging themselves. And
Yes. And I think it comes down to trust. I think it comes down to trust on all levels. So if you have a menstrual cycle, then, you know, trusting that you will pass through the premenstrual phase and there will be renewal after your period. Trusting that I'm pointing outside now, that spring will come after winter. Trusting that things settle after a crisis. Trusting, you know, and learning to trust that the group will align itself, that there is a wisdom in every cycle. There is a wisdom and intelligence within that cycle that we, our little pea brains, do not understand. You know, we can't know this, so we have to step into liminal space. We have to step into not knowing when we're engaging with this. I'm sure I'm putting a load of people off. You know, I thought I'll turn up and it'll be la 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 lovely. No, it's ambivalent. There's a mess. You have to hold difficult stuff. It takes forever.
Yeah, but I think it's, you know, when a space is held tightly and well, it can look really easy, you know, and the reality is actually that a lot of thinking goes into it, preparation, all sorts of things. And I think it's good to have some sense of that before you take the plunge. But, yeah. You know, if we're thinking now of somebody who's been called to do circle work and they are feeling a bit that imposter syndrome, what would you say to them?
I think listen to the call. I mean, for me, it was, I got the call with the pandemic my body was saying no to doing continuing with body work, and then the pandemic arrived, and that was my kick up the bum. And to I think if you're feeling the call, whether it's a friend saying, oh, why don't you, or your clients asking for it, or whatever it is, or an opportunity from a third party and a venue opens up, is to just do it. To just do it with all the vulnerability, take your imposter syndrome by the hand and give her a massive hug and say, come on, let's do it together. You know, employ those different parts of you, employ that kindly mothering part, the authoritative part who knows shit, all those parts, to take the imposter along with you and embrace her. Because also that imposter, you know, that's part of the, that if you can show up authentically, as you said, that will be hugely reassuring for the participants in the circle.
So is there anything else you'd like to say as we come to a close, as you've been thinking about this?
I have a big weekend coming up, and I have quite a few groups this weekend that I'm running. So this couldn't have come at a better time. And I think I think I should listen to my own advice.
Go for it.
That's what I think. I mean, particularly about taking my mess with me, you know, and standing with that, but not, I can't remember her name, but Becky Quick talks about all the different parts of ourselves being on the bus, but you don't want the inner critic in the driver's seat, you know, you don't want the imposter, the person with the part with the imposter syndrome driving the bus, because then you'll kind of do a quick U-ey and you'll be back, you know, you won't get there. But to take all the parts with you, to put a kindly, careful driver in charge, but bring everybody else along, bring the mess along, bring your own mess along too.
Because I think it goes again back to what we were talking about with this idea of a leader, and they have the power, but also I think there's a sense that they should be perfect and never put a foot wrong. And perhaps we can say, when we're talking said about a space holder, that we bring all our humanness with us.
Yes, and we will, and people will project stuff on you that you have no control over.
Comes back to this idea also of a safe space, or is it safe enough? There's so much that we can do as a facilitator, but we can't do, you know, everything. There's things outside of our control as well. Yeah. Well, this has been such a rich conversation, Kate. Thank you so much for taking the plunge, even though it did feel edgy.
I felt the call. You gave me the call, and I needed to step up.
Where can people find more about your work?
Thank you for asking. You can go to katecodrington.co.uk. And there is a ton, it's a megalith, it's a Vogon of a ship of kindness and containment and reassurance there. And if you go from the homepage to start here, you will find a gorgeous resource library of a lot of yoga nidra for perimenopause, for life, for resting. There are half a dozen free workshops on rest, body image, all kinds of things, hot flushes, all kinds of things there. And there are graphics of the inner seasons, and there are practices to connect with your body, and all kinds of delicious stuff. And you can access that for free from katecodrington.co.uk.
Amazing. It sounds like an incredible resource.
You've been listening to the Circle Holding podcast. I've been Tessa Venuti Sanderson.
And I've been Julia Davis. We would love for you to rate and review this podcast. A 5-star rating means more people will find us.
We're the co-authors of the book Circle Holding, A Practical Guide to Facilitating Talking Circles.
Thank you for joining us today.
You can find our trainings at circleholding.org. We hope that you find a community where you can be authentically you very soon.